It was the sixth night after the letter came. The city was loud with rumor that the Legion had fallen, that the enemy crossed the river, that no one would return from the north. But still, Livia lit the little oil lamp, the one her mother gave her the night before her wedding, when she was still soft with joy, not worn thin by waiting. She placed it on the window ledge facing east. The stars blinked above the rooftops, the oil trees murmured in the wind, and she whispered, "Spays, my hope in darkness. If he lives, carry him home. If he does not, carry me through." She placed beside the lamp a single white crocus, a spring flower blooming in the winter. It was her offering, her vow. She didn't know if prayers worked. She didn't know if Spays heard her, but in the stillness, her heart calmed. Her hands stopped shaking, and she could breathe again. 3 weeks later, the Legion returned, broken, but alive. Her husband was amongst them. He had survived beneath a collapsed tree, lost for days, dreaming of firelight and white petals. She told no one what she had done. But every year after that, on the first night of winter, Livia would light the lamp again, just in case someone else needed to find their way back to hope. I am Spays, not blind wishing, but sacred perseverance. I am the breath between despair and dawn, the silent presence you call on when all else has left you. I do not promise what you desire. I nourish the strength to keep walking when you cannot see what lies ahead. They call me weak. They think of hope as fragile, naive, sentimental, but I am older than fear and deeper than fate. I am the root that holds through storms, the whisper that steadies the trembling hand, the warmth that remains in the ashes after the fire. Do not confuse me with illusion. I am not denial. I see clearly the brokenness, the grief, the ending, and still I rise with you. I am the grace of possibility that outlives ruin. I was not born of Olympus. I rose in the hearts of mortals when chaos entered the world. I came last from the jar, not because I was forgotten, but because I was needed most. Some say I am all that was left. They are wrong. I am what was saved. When we speak of hope in classical thought, two figures emerge across the centuries like twin constellations in a stormy sky, the Greek Elpis and the Roman Spays, both named hope, but they are not the same. Their differences shape how hope has been interpreted for millennia as either a divine grace or a dangerous illusion. Nowhere is this contrast more evident than in the myth of Pandora's jar. The earliest versions of the myth come from the 8th century poet Hesiod, particularly in his work, Works and Days. In this story, Pandora is fashioned by the gods as a beautiful but fated gift to humanity. She is given a jar, which is often misinterpreted as a box, and she was told not to open it. Driven by curiosity, or perhaps destiny itself, she opens the jar and all the evils of the world escape. Plague, sorrow, war, old age, toil, and death. But one thing remains behind, trapped in the jar. Elpis, or what we call hope. This moment has sparked centuries of debate. Was hope intentionally kept inside to protect it? Or was it withheld, a cruel trick denying humans the one force that could ease their suffering. Hope can be viewed in a positive light, as a divine consolation. From this perspective, Elpis was left in the jar as a gift, the last divine grace not to be lost in the chaos. It represents the enduring spark of the human spirit, the belief in possibility, and the quiet resilience that keeps us moving forward, even when all seems lost. Hope can alternatively be seen as a cruel delusion. Some ancient philosophers viewed hope as the final curse, the illusion that prolongs suffering by keeping mortals passively expectant. In this view, hope is not empowering, it is a false light that prevents us from accepting reality as it is. For the Romans, space was not ambiguous, she was unambiguously divine. While the Greeks saw hope as potentially dangerous, the Romans elevated it as a central force in both personal virtue and civic order. Space was honored in temples, prayed to by the poor and the powerful alike, and she was invoked in times of war, peace, illness, or even political upheaval. The Greeks, shaped by tragic literature and philosophical realism, saw hope as something to question. The Romans, rooted in pragmatism and endurance, saw hope as something to protect, to invoke, and to build upon. Space was one of the virtues, the divine personifications of essential Roman values, alongside faith, health, and harmony. She was not a passive feeling, but an active virtue, cultivated both in the individual heart and the body politic. She was prayed to by the poor and the powerful. She was enthroned in times of chaos, not as a desperate plea, but as Rome's declaration of survival. Where Elpis was a mythological consequence, Spes was a ritual presence. Cicero calls hope one of the greatest supports of human life. Roman Stoics, while wary of ungoverned emotion, saw hope as a future-directed force, not a prediction, but a posture. Fear and hope were both projections, but fear froze the will, while hope moved it toward right action. Thus, Spes was not blind optimism. She was the discipline of continuing. Temples to Spes, like the one on Quirinal Hall, they weren't tucked away in the forests or private shrines. They stood in the civic heart of Rome. They were symbols not of escape, but of the state's capacity to survive, to adapt, and to renew. The Feast of Spes, also known as the Feast of Hope, or the Day of Hope, is a Roman feast dedicated to Spes, which occurs on August 1st of every year. This day corresponded with the birthday of Claudius, which explains the frequent occurrence of Spes on the coins of that emperor. During the Republic, a temple to Ancient Hope, or Spes Vetus, was supposed to have been located near the Praenestine Gate. The most ancient temple dedicated to Spes was in the Forum Politorium, or the Vegetable Market, built during the First Punic War. In 110 BC, a temple was built to the triad of Spes, Fides, and Fortuna in the city of Capua. Numerous temples dedicated to Spes were erected across Latium, including Ostia, Gabii, Antium, Aricia, and so on, testifying to her widespread significance during the Roman Republic and to the essential role hope played in sustaining the resilience of the Roman people. In times of war, famine, and even upheaval, Spes was invoked as a force of collective imagination, the willingness to believe in future peace, justice, and healing, even when the present was dark. She was hope as structure, not sentiment, but as architecture for the future. Roman poets wrote of hope not as erasure of sorrow, but its sacred companion. Spes was a heartening and sustaining force amongst the Romans of the Republic. Plautus, the Roman playwright, crafted characters who frequently turned to the goddess Bays, invoking her amid their trials and uncertainties. In Virgil's Aeneid, Aeneas carries hope as the seed of a future city, even as Troy burns behind him. In Ovid, Spes becomes the last companion of the poor, a goddess who lives not in Olympus, but in the heart of the grieving. Hope in poetry becomes an aesthetic and a moral virtue, not the denial of grief, but the refusal to be destroyed by it. In Roman thought, a crucial distinction emerged between hope, spes, and expectation, expectatio. Expectation, a grasping for a specific outcome prone to disappointment, was seen as potentially dangerous. But hope, or spes, was a virtue rooted in the unknown, willingness to remain open to what might come, rooted in trust, not control. The distinction is key. To hope was not to predict, it was to remain open, humble, and capable of response, no matter what came. Spes, like all true goddesses, is an archetype, a soul pattern that emerges most powerfully during liminal moments, after a breakdown, before clarity, after loss, before renewal, after exile, before home. She governs the spiritual space of stillness, not idle, but alert. She teaches that hope is not naive, but holy. Not a promise of ease, but a divine refusal to surrender to despair. In the 21st century, we are surrounded by uncertainty, climate change, global conflict, spiritual disconnection, mental health crises. Many feel despair not as an emotion, but as a cultural atmosphere. Spes offers an alternative current, one that acknowledges fear, but does not serve it. Her archetypal relevance speaks especially to people in transition, grief, divorce, job loss, illness, communities rebuilding after trauma or even injustice, activists and visionaries who carry hope in the face of long odds, and spiritual seekers who need to trust a path they cannot yet see. Unlike superficial positivity, Spes offers enduring, earned hope, not because everything will be okay, but because we become more whole as we walk through uncertainty with integrity. As with any archetype, Spes has a shadow side. When misunderstood, hope can become delusion, hoping for what cannot or should not be. Avoidance, using hope to bypass reality or grief. And dependency, placing hope externally rather than cultivating it within. In her shadow, Spes becomes Elpis at her most dangerous, the false promise that paralyzes rather than empowers. But when honored rightly, Spes brings us to a mature form of hope, one that is intimate with sorrow, yet still sings. To engage Spes today is to treat hope as a practice, not a mood. She teaches us that it is sacred to keep going, even when no outcome is guaranteed. That to wait with integrity is not passivity, but moral courage. That hope is not always loud or grand. Sometimes it is the quiet choice not to give up. Spes does not erase pain or prevent endings, but she accompanies us through them, allowing us to meet uncertainty without abandoning our souls. She is not the spark that prevents the fall. She is the soft ember that refuses to be extinguished, even in ruin. In the age of uncertainty, Spes walks beside every seeker, every survivor, every soul that dares to believe that meaning is still possible, not in spite of the darkness, but because of it. In a world saturated with anxiety, quick fixes, and false positivity, cultivating a relationship with Spes offers a radical spiritual alternative, the path of enduring grace. This is not about hoping for the best. It is about learning to hold the unknown with sacred attention, to root into trust without bypassing reality. Space in modern spiritual work becomes a quiet guide and a divine mirror for those navigating transitions, navigating heartbreaks, reinventions, and the long arc of healing. You may feel drawn to space if you are in a liminal phase, after endings but before clarity, if you're carrying vision or change that feels delayed or impossible, if you are living with grief, illness, or uncertainty but unwilling to give up, if you are craving stillness and gentle inner strength, not external answers, if you are a healer, a counselor, a spiritual guide who holds hope for others. In these roles, space is less of a goddess of arrival and more of a goddess of staying present, staying open, and staying human. In spiritual work, space invites us to shift from desire-based hope to soul-based trust. This means, under desire-based hope, I hope it happens. There is a fixation on the outcome. There's fear-driven craving. There's bypassing reality. But under soul-based trust, I trust what comes will shape me wisely. There is presence with process, faithful endurance, engaging reality with courage. Working with space aligns us with the mystical rhythms of emergence, the sense that something is being woven even when it cannot yet be seen. So what offerings can you give to connect to space? You can offer her the crocus, the poppy, the lily, or some chamomile, spring water or milk, unfinished threads, paper cranes, or soft white stones. There are certain sacred phrases as well you may want to consider. Spei mea in tenebris, my hope in darkness, semper spes, always hope. Devotion to space becomes a way of living in alignment with sacred emergence. It reshapes how we listen, how we wait, and how we believe. It asks us to build our lives not on certainty, but on reverent trust and what is still possible. To follow space is not to flee sorrow. It is to carry a small sacred ember through the night, trusting that morning will come, even if not yet. Hope, said the poet Emily Dickinson, is the thing with feathers. But space might add, and I am the one who carries it when you forget how to fly. Space is the sacred embodiment of hope that endures, not as naive optimism, but as a steady force of spiritual resilience. Where others falter in despair, space holds the threshold, whispering not promises, but possibility. Her power is quiet, but unyielding. She does not erase pain. She stands beside it, reminding mortals that forward movement is still possible, even when the path is unclear.